Get started with the park meeting. Looks like we're recording now. And we kind of have a split in-person and virtual meeting. We'll jump right into introductions, and we'll start with folks in the room, and I'll ask Will to lead us off.
Hi, I'm Will Lackey. I'm with the Oregon Department of Transportation.
Nate Agelsoff, Oregon Department of Forestry.
Kate Jackson, Department of Environmental Quality.
Jeff Jenkins, Oregon State University.
Fred Berman, Oregon Institute of Occupational Health Sciences.
Garnet Cook, Oregon OSHA.
Good morning, Ted Bunch, Park Coordinator and Park Co-Chair.
Thanks, and this is Curtis Coode from Oregon Health Authority, Public Health Division, and Park Co-Chair, and your host this year for the park meetings. And Garnet, could I ask you to grab that and pass it down the table that way? So there we go, thanks. So again, folks on the phone, go ahead and introduce yourself all at the same time.
Stephanie, why don't you start?
Morning, Stephanie Page, Oregon Department of Agriculture.
Thank you.
Danette.
From the Oregon Poison Center.
Hi, Cherise. Thank you.
I'm Danette Fazera. I'm Water Policy Coordinator with Oregon Fish and Wildlife.
Hey, Danette.
Crystal with Health Authority.
Hi, Crystal. Anyone else? Okay, so first up on our agenda is to review and finalize the January minutes. Those came out yesterday. I know I had a chance to take a look at them, and seems like it was right to me. I must have said something, but maybe I didn't during the last meeting. That's fine. But let's just take a couple minutes to see if anyone has any suggested changes for the January minutes.
You must have said something.
I didn't write anything down, so I think Crystal covered it all so well that I had nothing to add.
I can easily check the recording to make sure.
Okay.
But maybe not.
Yeah.
On my update, at number two, that position update has not been officially filled yet. So that's a temporary appointment.
Temporary? All right. Thanks, Nate.
In terms of Scott? And Will, I assume yours is right.
Yeah.
Anyone on the phone, any feedback on the minutes?
No.
Thanks, Crystal. Okay. Well, with that, with the a little bit more updating the announcement about Scott not being permanently in the position, and I think Ted's going to look back to see if I had an update. It seems like I would have, and that'll, with that, we'll get that updated and pass that along as the final set of meeting minutes from January. Okay, so what we'll do is start a round of agency updates. I will point out that after the updates, we'll have option for public comment. I don't know if there will be any members of the public. There's no one for you on the phone. There's no one sitting behind me right now. After that, we'll go into 2020 eradication efforts by ODA. And we've got that all loaded up and ready to go. And we'll talk about the 2015 to 2017 park data, and I assume that'll refer to the legislative report?
Correct.
All right, good. So I'll hold my hand out until that part of the discussion.
Perfect.
Makes sense? All
perfect.
Right. Okay.
Perfect.
Great. And yes, Crystal, I did get those distributed to the park board here. Unfortunately, you all on the phone. Maybe Crystal, if you could send that out to the park board, make sure that it's, you know, marked draft. Then everyone else will have that handout as well. Appreciate it.
All right, I'll work on that. Thanks.
Thanks. All right. So, how about we'll. Well, we'll just start with Will again. Why not? We'll start with agency updates and Will from ODOT.
Thank you. The only thing I can think of right now is we're just kind of getting out of winter and into spring, and so we're going to probably start on the west side of some of our shoulder herbicide applications. So we do have a notification number. It's tied to our trip check program, and that number is 888-996-8080. And people can call in for daily herbicide application information on that. So they pick a highway, and the information stays on there for 2 weeks. So it's just our form of notification. Our employees contact dispatch in the morning, and then it goes on that system.
So is it going to be, you're saying it's actually going to be on Trip Check?
No, it's just tied in the same Trip Check database.
Oh, okay.
We're not going to put herbicide applications on a map or anything like that. There's just too much stuff to tie in there. We want to keep that with traffic and collisions and construction and that sort of stuff.
Right.
It's pre-recorded then?
Yeah, so it goes into, they'll say highway and mile point, and so you pick a highway and it'll say herbicide applications are taking place at or near Florence, Oregon, on Highway 101.
Okay.
Yeah.
Say the number you want with that?
Yeah, 888-996-8080.
So, Will, just so you know, when I wrote the SOPs for 211, mm-hmm. I supplied them with that number probably 3 years ago.
Okay.
So when people call, they can provide that number to the citizens that's calling.
Okay.
Thanks, Ted. Just wondering about that.
That's it.
All right. Thanks, Will. Mate?
Yeah. Sure. So, just to expand on the, go through some quick staffing changes. We're seeing a lot across the department, but most notable for where you folks would intersect would be, like I say, our field support unit manager. We're interviewing for that. That's the temporary fill by Scott Sparingen out of Roseburg office, but that'll be permanently filled here in the next couple of weeks. And then also to follow shortly after that, our monitoring unit manager, which was previously held by Mark Ann Allen for quite a while. Mark Ann has gone over to a position at Department of Agriculture.
Yes, she has.
And we love her. So, we will miss her. So the recruitment for that is out, and a slight structure change there, where Mark Ann had previously supervised our forest health staff, so he's a species coordinator and entomologist and a pathologist. For the next year, Mike Kroon, so you might remember Mike, he'll be kind of orchestrating that. And the thinking there is that there is expected considerable workload on the monitoring unit for at least the next year. And so create some separation there. And so going into the short session, we were watching a number of things. Most of which didn't materialize, but particularly that MOU that was brokered by the conservation community and timber industry. And I think we're still watching that to see what might come out of that. And so on hold, going into the session was some of the board directed work around the CISCI project, direction on sufficiency there for fish-bearing streams, and then also part of that tangentially maybe was the board directive to for ODF and DEQ to align our water quality standards with TMDLs and that sort of thing. Coming to a close in by about summer, I would hope, Forest Action Plan, 5-year review on that. Themes for 2020 are very similar to what they were. We've been calling it the W's of wildland work, wildfire. Get the idea. But we're also trying to align that with some other emerging issues and recognize those in that plan and align it with stewardship modernization effort that the Forest Service is doing some of their programs, which could have implications for where we spend some of our landowner assistance dollars.
Nate?
I don't plug it.
All right.
Question. I am a Fern subscriber, and for the past couple of years have specifically targeted Lincoln City or Lincoln County in aerial applications, and this year I've seen a number of, like I said, notifications for the first time since a ban wasn't enacted and then the judge overturned it. Any concerns you guys are hearing about?
No, I think it was, I don't know what you observed, but it was kind of a slow trickle in, you know, as they're kind of testing the waters.
Yes,
maybe.
Yes.
And
small acreage, you know, I haven't seen anything more than 50 or 60 acres.
But nothing that I'm aware of has kind of escalated.
I am relatively sure that our lead pesticide investigator, Mike Odenthal, is going to be contacting ODF staff for some joint observations.
Okay.
I'm just trying to send that PowerPoint to the people on the phone.
Already did.
Oh, you did? All right, that's thanks, Nate. Okay.
The EPC is meeting next week, and I've done this enough times now to realize that EQC is meeting usually within a week of the park board. They meet every other month. this time next week, it overlaps a little bit with the pesticide symposium, and in the early afternoon Wednesday, there's going to be two toxics project summaries that the statewide teams talked to. Toxics and also the Malin partnership. The drinking water protection grants are just about to close. That's a joint DEQ OHA. OHA is the Business Oregon Action Managers, the grants. The Regional Solutions has been reaching out to this through the small cities groups of legal Oregon cities. We started back in November. Letting them know the opportunity to look at source water protection, whether it's a forest watershed survey, or even, and this has been a hard distinction to make, purchasing flow monitoring and sediment monitoring, turbidity recording equipment that's upstream from the intake of a drinking water source is eligible for coverage under those grants. And the trick is getting a watershed council on a conversational basis with the drinking water provider, because the drinking water provider has to agree to want to do that project. But it could develop sediment information that could be used to correlate with weather events and with harvesting if it happens. Mm-hmm. So several DEQ staff have been going to those small cities meetings to talk about it. Can't tell whether we can get any applications out of that, but we're really trying to encourage the drinking water providers to look upstream because it's becoming a bigger issue for them. You've all probably seen the news. The governor issued an executive order to try and implement what we can statewide for clean fuels and carbon, calling it cap and reduce, using existing programs. And DEQ got a $5 million out of the emergency board to start staffing that. It's really extension of existing programs. The clean fuels program already looked at reducing carbon content. We can go after adding methane emissions to landfill permits, that sort of thing. There's going to be a joint action with ODOT and DEQ to incentivize electrification for transportation purposes. And then the materials management group has been focusing grants opportunities on food waste reduction, which is a big part of our carbon impact. But those all are existing programs. You know, we get a little bit more resources to work on. And finally, we're just about to roll out some changes in our complaint system. DEQ's had both an online and a toll-free number for people to register complaints, and we get them. and it's been a huge workload. I mean, some of our regional staff spend 60% of their time chasing down these complaints. So the change that we're rolling out is really stating up front when we get a call or when we get a complaint, if it belongs at the local level, and we'll be just turning it back to the counties. It's a code enforcement issue.
Yeah.
It will involve a little bit of outreach from the currently affected staff, and it's really kind of hard to tell what kind of pushback we might get from it. We need to try to focus the complaints that we get on things that DEQ actually has some authority about.
Yeah. Question?
Yes.
And has DEQ actually done outreach with the counties so that they're aware?
I can give you a call, actually, if you want, because Mary Camera and I had identified it at some of the counties in our southern western area that we know have limited code enforcement capability themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really about authority. If you don't have the authority, there's nothing to act on.
Understood. Yeah, we get those calls, too.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kate. Jeff?
not a lot to report. MPIC put out last week a fact sheet on disinfectants for coronavirus. And it basically highlighted the antimicrobials divisions list and then put that together with how to use disinfectants safely, which was repurposed from some of our schools. We have a school fact sheet on kids not bringing disinfectant wipes to school with them, or teachers not distributing disinfectant wipes to kids. But we had an effort in that area a while back, and we kind of repurposed some of that information into a fact sheet on not only how to effectively use disinfectants for coronavirus, but also how to use them safely.
Thanks. Jeff?
Not the last time we're going to hear about coronavirus today.
Right.
So, coronavirus is a big topic, so, and for Oregon, chlorpyrifos is a big subject right now, whether to restrict its use further or to ban it outright. And so the Institute, Ken Anger just published a paper on Corpura costs, along with Diane Rollman, who was formerly with the Institute, and Egyptian collaborators, and they went to Egypt, where Corpura costs is extensively on cotton crops, for one. And as you know, the rules of engagement are different from ours, and so there's a lot more exposure and potential exposure of workers. And this paper, basically for the, I guess maybe for the first time, you can correct me, has been able to, in the field, make a correlation between exposure and actual effects on neurobehavioral parameters. So it's a really interesting paper, a long time in the coming, because of restrictions on shipping of biological samples internationally and things. So it's taken a huge effort, but it appears, from my scanning of the paper yesterday, it appears to be a pretty good paper, really scientifically sound on the basis. So that's something new that's come out, and maybe, I don't know whether it'll be germane to the current issue that Oregon's facing, but just another piece of the puzzle.
I can send that paper out.
Yeah, if anyone's interested.
Yeah, thanks.
And then the only other thing is, for next week's pesticide symposium, I'm going to be speaking about paraquat toxicology. I'm looking forward to it. It should be an interesting topic. That's it.
Thanks. Garnett?
Okay, so that pesticide symposium is next week, Tuesday and Wednesday. So it's all proceeding as planned, hopefully. And let's see. I'm also on the planning committee along with Crystal for GOSH 2021. And so we'll be kind of touching bases with some of you to hopefully come up with a good, some tracks for pesticides, cannabis, hemp. Because that's...
I was going to say GOSH is the Governor's Occupational Safety and Health Conference.
Forget the acronyms. And then Amy from NPIC reached out to me regarding training for first responders in Texas from EPA Region 6? No. It's not 9, that's California. 5. Anyway, because they've had a number of fatalities with aluminum phosphide and homeowners and fire departments responding and not knowing what to do. For the last event where the 4 kids died, they thought they went under the assumption it was carbon monoxide. And so I shared with her that I worked with one, I was doing an inspection at a berry farm, and the gentleman worked for the Silverton Fire Department. And so I provided him with all kinds of information on aluminum phosphide. He, in turn, I didn't hear back from him, and then he was attending a training of mine, and he said he had bought a phosphine meter and had done training for all the firefighters and first responders, and so that they were prepared. And so they knew what it looked like, they knew what it smelled like, and they knew how to monitor for it. And I told him, I almost hugged him, I was so excited. So one of the things that I have since thought of is on the fumigation management plans, when it's doing inside of a structure or a grain bin, anything like that, other than a burrow, they are required to contact the fire departments. And so that made me think that that's not being done, because when I had an individual contact the local fire department, they immediately called me and said, "What is this? What are we dealing with?" Mm. And so I think if more of that is being done, then the fire departments would be more aware. And that's part of the, like I said, the fumigation management plan. And then we have also, as Ted sent out, we completed our annual report for last year. So it's on our website under the pesticides page. And we also updated our SOP to include whenever we hear of allegations of drift, that our staff will then notify me and I'll notify Park, even if they're not alleging adverse health effects. So that was for Ted's request. So that was done.
There's a particular reason that was requested. Park received a concern through Oregon OSHA about people that had been exposed, or at least reported being exposed, but no allegations of adverse health. And so per the SOP, Park didn't initially receive it, again, because there were no allegations of adverse health. However, in this day and time, Park is trying to be a little bit more broad and receive these types of concerns. We've received them in the past from DEQ, Department of Forestry, Department of Ag, so it just seemed natural for Oregon OSHA to also kind of expand their SOPs in that regard.
We did contact ODA, though.
Yes.
And it was the only employees of the employer. And the employer got the break, too.
Oh. All right. That's very interesting. Thank you. Thank you, Garnett. Anything else? How about if we go to folks on the phone? Charisse, do you have an update from the Poison Center?
We're currently managing the calls for the clinicians of the whole state for the COVID line. So we answer questions. We don't recommend treatment, but a lot of our calls are like, can this patient be tested? What's the method in testing, those kinds of things? Or my local public health department is not, I can't get a hold of them, what should I do? Like, do I get PPEs? Those kinds of questions. And our answers basically come from, all of our guidelines come from OHA. And we follow the OHA suggestions and guidelines, and we realize that other hospitals have their own policies. So we always recommend to also have them look, talk to their ID people, because they might have their own policies. So that's with the COVID. And Garnet, I got your email regarding the statistics for disinfectants.
Yes.
Is that what you wanted?
Yes.
Just the disinfectant?
Yes.
Would that include bleach?
Yes.
Okay. I will get that together today and I'll send it to you. So hopefully you can include that in your presentation next week.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And to follow up on the... The mismatch of the Poison Center faxing the pesticide reports to OHA. I spoke with Crystal, right? I think it was with Crystal.
Yep.
That sometimes they just don't register some of our cases, just because it's not really one of the reportable kinds. So that's why we have a mismatch.
Okay. Thanks. Anything else?
Hey, Tony. This is Crystal. We have been getting those. They've been coming in really well. So thanks for you and your staff for doing that.
And we were actually trying to figure out an easier way for the staff to send it, so maybe via secure email, but I have to speak with our OHSU email people, the telecom, to see how we could do that.
All right, well, thank you. We'll follow up separately, it sounds like, but thanks for all your work on that.
You're welcome.
Anything
That's
else?
That's why we're here.
Okay, thanks, Charisse.
Thank you.
Danette?
Yeah, thank you. I guess the only really relevant thing that I've been working on is our vector control pesticide application approval, which are required by statute.
Yeah.
To date, we've received about 16 of their annual pesticide use plans. I expect a handful more or so to come in yet this spring, and we've been sending out approvals on those. And the American Mosquito Control Association meeting was supposed to be in Portland this year, next week. It has since been canceled. canceled.
Sure.
As our most mass gathering. So that's kind of a bummer, but the spring meeting of the Oregon chapter is still on for Monday, so I'll be speaking with those folks about kind of streamlining our pesticide use plan submittals. A lot of times things don't change at all from year to year, and we're going to have just a kind of a sign-off where people can say last year's PUP is still kind of in effect or whatever, and we can just send an approval in a really streamlined way rather than sending the entire thing every year. And that's all I have.
Thanks, Danette.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's turn to ODA. Stephanie, do you want to lead us off?
Sure, I've got a few things, and I think Ted probably has some more things to add too. We're starting to think ahead to 2021 and develop our LED concepts and policy option packages. So there are a couple LED concepts and POPs related to pesticides. On the LED concept side, one of our two concepts relates to harmonizing Oregon statutes and rules with EPA's certification and training rules that were released a couple of years ago. So we just submitted our plan to EPA on how we plan to harmonize our statutes and rules with the CNP rules. Some of the harmonization will involve a statutory change, and so that's one of our concepts. And then the other one relates to creating a new license type. Currently under Oregon law, private commercial applicators don't really have an option for a standalone license. They need to be working for an operator unless they are working on ag or forest lands and a couple of other use types. So really this is kind of government streamlining, creating this license type for folks who, for example, apply pesticides on at a winery or at a golf course. And currently, their only option if they need to be licensed is to work for someone who's licensed as an operator. And this would just save the business the cost of becoming licensed as an operator. So that's our other concept. On the POP side, we are considering a POP that would add some additional staff to the pesticides program. And we're particularly thinking that we'd like to beef up after-hours availability so that we might end up bringing on a couple of folks that specifically know when they're brought on that part of their responsibility is to respond to that, to those Friday at 4:30 types of calls that we sometimes get. So that's the main one. I think we're also pursuing fund shifting PARC back to 50-50 split between general fund and other funds. During the 17 to 19 biennium, PARC had a one-time fund shift to completely other funds of our registration fees. And for this current biennium phase, there was a permanent fund shift for PARC to all other funds. And so we're considering asking to get that split back into our budget.
Okay.
Couple of work groups that we have going on. There's the chlorpyrifos work group that's met a couple of times and has been a really valued participant in those two meetings, so I've really appreciated his help with that. We're excited to have David Ferrer from OHA join the group. I hope I pronounced his name correctly. So he's going to be joining us at the work group third meeting coming up at the end of March. And so a lot of the work group's first two meetings have been focused on sharing information with the group about the kind of the existing regulatory foundation around prohibiting or minimizing exposure to chlorpyrifos, and then sharing how the labeling process works, what sorts of uses chlorpyrifos-containing products are currently registered for, lots of background information. And at this third meeting, we're going to focus quite a bit on discussing possible mitigation measures that ODA could adopt to further reduce the risk of exposure to chlorpyrifos. So that's the work group. And then I also wanted to mention that the Pesticide Stewardship Program has an advisory committee now, and that committee has met twice and will be meeting again at the end of April. So some of the things we've talked about so far has just been an overview of the program, and then we've done a couple of case studies on how PSC is working and kind of some things that are going well and not going well in a couple of the areas of the state where we have PSCs. I think I'll stop there and see if folks have any questions, and if not, we can move on to the next person.
Stephanie, this is Curtis. I do have a question on policy option packages. We are going to need to discuss the PEST program budget with you as part of that.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm wondering when would be, you know, when do you need budget information for your POP?
Okay, I will, I'll reach out to our budget folks and find out for you. Our initiatives are due March 23rd, but we might have a little more time on the financial side of things.
Yeah.
So I'll give our financial folks a heads up that you would like to visit with us about the budget to see what kind of time frame makes the most sense.
Thank you.
Great.
Ted?
Good morning. I will leave Japanese beetles to Dr. Jessica Rendon. Although, I guess the only thing I'll mention that she might not mention is that there have been two open houses. I've attended one. Crystal has attended one. They were pretty well received. As Stephanie kind of alluded to earlier, we do have a customer within the treatment area who has expressed some concerns. And we will continue to meet with this individual and talk to him and listen and go forward. I never thought that in, 20 years of working around pesticides that I would be discussing human coronavirus, but there's a couple of different things that have been going on recently. It was probably about a week ago, early in the morning, I noticed some staff in my coworkers' cubes that don't work there, and so I stood up, asked them what they were doing. Come to find out, they were from DAS, and they were supposed to be going around disinfecting all contact surfaces. When I told a young lady that she was in the pesticides area of the building, she didn't necessarily know what that meant. Pulled the label, the contact time was a minute. Long story short, concerns were communicated back to DAS, and I understand that an increased emphasis has been put on the 1 minute contact time.
So they're just spraying and wiping, that's what you were saying?
The contact time was less than a minute. Yes.
Spreading it around.
Yeah.
So contact time, as you all can imagine, is extremely important from a disinfectant perspective. A couple of weeks ago, an industry group published a list of registered disinfectants that against human coronavirus. About a week and a half after that, the EPA published their list, and yesterday, the Department of Agriculture communicated with the Oregon Health Authority and provided a list of disinfectants that are registered within the state of Oregon. The Oregon Health Authority is going to be communicating that information. Presumably, that information was also provided to the Oregon Poison Center.
And I'll just jump in, just so Crystal will say, I didn't hear anything about that. I connected Rose Kachadorian with our incident commander. They were asking for toxicological support, and I said, no, wait a minute, that's not right. So we got them connected with the health-acquired infections and infection control folks that work with all the healthcare providers. So I think that's the connection that's been made at this point, and all of those communications are being handled through probably the Joint Information Center, et cetera.
So that's all that I had, Curtis.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Ted. Crystal, would you like to give your update from OHA?
Unmute.
Hi, good morning. So not much to update. It's kind of a quiet season for us for pesticides. And so I guess the main update is preliminary numbers for the legislative update for the report that that I know Park's working on. So we have those numbers, and if there's any questions, we can follow up with that. But we should be on track to contribute to that effort. Curtis, am I missing any significant updates?
No, Crystal. I think those numbers, that handout. Well, how about if we come back to that at the last hour of the agenda is about the 15-17 report, and then we'll get a chance to describe it a little bit more at that point in time. I guess, are there any more developments on case collection essence or anything that's new that you'd like to report on?
Sorry, case collection estimate?
Yeah, or essence or anything new that's been happening?
Well, we do have our essence cases coming in. That's up and running. So that's working quite well. And our data backlog is almost completed. So we're just kind of polishing up some of the things we've done. And hopefully we'll do some an updated SOP soon to be able to better express that to our partner agencies.
Thanks. I guess the other, just to follow up from Crystal, the other thing that we'll be working on, I think after the SOPs, is our occupational public health program. We're funded by CDC, National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, NIOSH. And one of the things that we said that we would do in that report is do an analysis of contributing factors. And we certainly have a lot of that information. We've requested information from TED to help us with that. We'll be looking at, the last time we did a really full analysis it's 5 or 6 years ago now. And so we're wanting to get a good, 10-year chunk of data or so and go back and refresh that analysis. And, one of the things, and you see that reflected in this three-page handout that Crystal is working. Our data comes in through a FileMaker database program, which is common to the Park database, is also FileMaker. So I've been really impressed by that database software's ability to produce graphs and some really good information. It's pretty slick. So Crystal was able to produce this relatively quickly, and that gives me good hope that analysis that we do, the more expanded analysis, won't be as excruciating as the last couple of times that we did that, going back 5 and 7 or 8 years ago, or the last times we did a full analysis. So stay tuned for that.
What were some of the highlights from the last analysis?
Gosh, just going back so far, Ted, it's like, I think, I want to say it was 2014 that we did that, and it was covering through years up to 2012. I think that maybe that last report covered Triangle Lake, perhaps. There's some more significant cases since then that we can talk about. NIOSH, of course, is interested in occupational exposures, and we're not going to limit our analysis to occupational. Certainly we will highlight occupational exposures, but we'll make sure to include all exposures that we can. Crystal, did you want to say anything about that upcoming work?
No, I guess just that if anyone's interested in any particular aspect, I know this might fit with the disinfectant work. I might run the disinfectant numbers for the pesticide symposium at the same time that I do the other one. But if anyone's interested in anything in particular, I can try and add into the numbers that we're doing. So the expanded report will probably cover some of the same things in this smaller deliverable that you guys have a copy of. But if anyone wants anything added, we can certainly check into that.
Thanks, and we'll be sure to give an update at the next park meeting as well. Okay, so that's it for agency updates. We went a little bit over on that, but that still leaves us 6 minutes for public comment. Seeing that there is no members of the public, we'll just move right through that part of the agenda. We have a break that's scheduled at this point in time, and we have 15 minutes scheduled. I want to get a sense from the room if you think you all need a 15-minute break or how much time you'd like, 5, 10, to get out and stretch your legs and maybe get some fresh air, et cetera.
I'm open. We have time in the agenda either way.
Yep.
10 minutes?
All right. Thanks a lot. We'll go ahead for folks on the phone. I'll walk around and put the phone on mute there. And we'll just recollect in about 10 minutes, so that'll be about 5 after.